It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Americans love sports. Many of us sign our children up for their first teams when they're only 3 years old. By the time kids reach middle school and high school, they have an opportunity to be part of athletic programs at school. And the message is that all kids are welcome to join in and give it a try. But the reality is that there are many obstacles that prevent kids from participating in these programs. Transportation is a huge barrier for many, and the fact that a lot of kids have been participating in expensive club programs all through elementary school means that kids who are new to a sport can't even get on a team to develop their skills. This hour, we're exploring issues of access and equality in youth athletics, and I'll talk with some Iowans who are working to level the playing field. My first guest today is Dan Gould. He is director of the Institute for the Study of Youth Sports and a professor of kinesiology at Michigan State University. Hello, Dan.
Hi, good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Delighted to be here.
And Dan, I think a lot of us have an idea that sports are good for kids, but this is something that has been studied a great deal. So let's talk about what are the benefits of participating in extracurricular sports activities for middle schoolers and high schoolers?
Yeah, we've had extensive reviews of the research on the topic, and the data shows that there's predominantly positive effects of participation. Physical activity levels are higher if you're doing sport versus sitting at home. You learn skills if you play tennis or learn to swim that you could use for a lifetime. So there's a physical benefits. We also know there's a number of social and psychological benefits. Kids who play sports and do extracurricular activities stay more connected to school. They tend to do better grade-wise during the season, especially. They develop teamwork, self-esteem. They can develop some leadership skills. Now, with all that being said, the reviews have concluded that the abundant evidence shows there's more positives than negatives. There can be some negatives. Kids can be placed under stress. Too much stress too soon can lead to burnout. But the majority of reviewers say, in most cases, especially if you have quality coaching, the positives are going to outweigh the negatives.
Well, and speaking of some of those positives, I think that it seems a little counterintuitive that being on a sport team is actually good for your grades, given how much time sports takes out of the available time that kids have. Why does it work that way?
Yeah, it's a good question. A couple things happen. Some people feel that the kids learn better time management skills. It's like many of us during the week, we have a schedule and we sort of stick to the schedule, and maybe on the weekend we kick back and Saturday's gone before we got anything done because we end up wasting more time. So some of it's probably a schedule and having to be certain places. Secondly, there's sort of a carrot in that if you don't maintain in many schools a certain grade point average, you can't play. So kids have to study, to some level to be eligible to play. So we think it's probably those two, sort of scheduling, they learning these time management skills, and also the carrot and maybe the penalty. If you don't study, you won't be eligible for that semester.
Well, and there are some things that we can't really study. We can't really know what being on a team does for kids. But what's your feeling on it? What are some of those emotional and psychological benefits that we may not be able to quantify?
Actually, we have been able to do actual studies of that. A lot of it's self-report, where you have kids fill out scales about what they learn from sports participation, or we do interviews. And some of the things we find that kids learn, oftentimes the kids, one is teamwork. I learned that not everybody can play, or I need to work with kids that I may not be my buddies at school. So that would be one, kind of some social skills. I might be shy, but I have to talk to the coach. A lot of people talk about agency. Sports are typically pretty important in the community. People know about sports, so kids, it means something for kids, and they learn about working hard. And they can learn very positive things, like their self-esteem gets better because they made the team or they do well. Sometimes, which gets forgotten a lot today, it's really important that kids also learn about failure. They learn about disappointment and mistakes and how to bounce back from that. So those are some of the things that we've identified that kids learn, just a few of them.
Let's talk about obstacles, because, of course, with all of these benefits, and as you said, there can be some liabilities as well. But with all of these benefits, of course, we want to make sure that these kinds of activities are available to all the students who want to participate. And when we first started having school sports, I mean, that really was the way it was, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, in some sports like basketball, where there's a fewer kids on the team, sometimes not every kid who wants to play can make the team. But if a kid wants to play a sport, a boy or girl, sports like cross country, swimming, wrestling usually don't cut. So they usually can find a sport that they could play. And there's enough on the menu typically that kids can find something if they want.
And we have some problems with expensive fees for extracurricular activities in some arenas, but school districts have worked really hard to make sure that there's not a pay-to-play kind of system for high school athletics. So cost isn't supposed to be a barrier, but this is a personal issue for me because I go to my local high school and I look at the teams and I can see that the teams at this school do not reflect the diversity of the student body at the school, which caused me to start thinking about why would that be. So let's talk about barriers. What is standing in the way of kids who are a lower socioeconomic status participating in their free athletic programs in their junior highs or their high schools?
Yeah, and I think a lot of times we talk about there's like two youth sports in America. There's youth sports at like the suburban middle to upper middle class school that has really nice facilities. The parents can afford to send the kids to sports camps at a university in the summer. They have just more access and facilities. And then you go into urban areas where the schools tend to be, in general, the schools tend to have problems, but then the facilities are run down. It may not be safe to walk home from practice. And then sometimes what gets forgotten, but probably very relevant in a state like Iowa, is sort of the rural, where, you know, there's maybe not the same facilities as well, or there's a distance to school. How do kids get home? So I think a lot of us have been talking more, how do we try to close that gap? It's unfortunate that if we look over the last three or four decades, sort of the public expenditures on education probably haven't kept up with the need. So a lot of people are turning to philanthropic organizations, trying to get them involved, you know, public-private partnerships to sort of bridge some of these gaps. But some of it's also awareness. Like, you know, maybe, you know, it's a lot cheaper to invest in kids, to get them involved in healthy activities where hopefully a high percentage learn good skills, develop a sense of purpose in life, then leave kids with no activities and a certain percentage end up in jail or other places. Just from an economic view, what you put in prevention by putting kids into positive youth development programs is so much more economically efficient than waiting for kids to get in trouble later and having to deal with that.
So transportation is a big issue for a lot of kids. And I think that that's a big issue in Iowa because we are more spread out, even in our quote unquote urban areas. The high school can still be 3 or 4 miles away from your home, and mm-hmm. it's hard to walk home. And it's not fair to ask kids to walk home. A lot of districts do not have activity buses. In fact, that is more an exception than a rule in the state. But also, you mentioned those suburban schools where parents can pay to put their kids in these, you know, club sports or send them to sports camps, things like that. But we have all these districts that are blends of that. So we have the kids that have been involved in those programs since they were, you know, 5 years old, 7 years old. But then we're coming into the middle schools or the junior highs where it's about half and half. So there are the kids who've been participating all along, whose parents have been able to pay for them to participate all along, and the kids who are brand new to a sport. That creates an incredible amount of inequality, doesn't it?
It ties to a larger theme that we experience today that a lot of us have labeled the professionalization of youth sport, where people have thought less about what the child is going to get in terms of the benefits we talked about from sport and more about like it's a path to get a college scholarship or we're going to win the state championship. So what we see is kind of the college model has shifted down to high school varsity. Now it's shifting down to middle school. And if it, you'll get children being asked to specialize in one sport at 9 or 10. And the literature around the world shows for most sports, you probably don't want to think about specialization until you're 14 or 15, even if then. If you look at some of the data, there was a study that came out a few years ago when Urban Meyer was the Ohio State coach, and it showed like 80% or more of their players were all multi-sport athletes in high school. So a lot of us are trying to get information out that having kids play multiple sports can be a really good idea. But then it goes back to, you know, and that's sort of the economic piece. Well, if a kid doesn't have money, how do we provide some of those services? And then you also mentioned the transportation piece, and maybe we need to think outside the box on this. And I want to be careful how I say it, because I remember 30 years ago, I lived in North Carolina, and when my wife and I first moved there, the high school seniors drove the buses, the school buses for the younger kids. And in a rural area like Iowa, if you have an 18-year-old high school senior who parents trust with farm equipment, et cetera, maybe that's an alternative.
Well, we used to do that. That has been that used to be the norm. We'd have, I think it was 17 years old plus driving buses, but it hasn't been that way for a long time.
Well, and I kind of would probably in general favor that, but if it's a case between no activity bus and it's a, you know, maybe an area that's fairly safe, maybe that's something we should think about. Or do we go to the retired community? Or do we get some of the local clubs involved to help sponsor an activity bus? I guess my view on it, it's not going to, if we keep doing what we've been doing with no activity bus, nothing's going to change. So putting some ideas on the table and trying to think outside the box a little, to me, is probably the way forward.
I'm talking with Dan Gould. He is director of the Institute for the Study of Youth Sport and a professor of kinesiology at Michigan State University. This hour, we're exploring issues of access and equality in youth athletics, and we have a lot of people to bring into this conversation as the hour goes on, but you're also welcome to join to share your experiences and your ideas for solutions to these problems. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about issues of access and equality in youth athletics. We've talked about some of the barriers that can keep kids from participating in sports in junior high or middle school and high school. Transportation is a big barrier for a lot of kids, but then also the inability to compete with other children who've been participating in club sports or specializing in a sport for many years by the time they reach middle school or junior high. With me is Dan Gould. He's director of the Institute for the Study of Youth Sports and a professor of kinesiology at Michigan State University. And I also want to bring another Dan into the conversation. Dan Huff is here. He is athletic director for the Waterloo School District, one of the few districts in Iowa that does have activity buses. Hello, Dan.
Good morning, Charity. Great to be here.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And first of all, for many people who are listening, they live in districts without activity buses. And if they've ever asked about it, they've probably been told it's way too expensive to have activity buses. How do activity buses work in Waterloo?
It's a great question. We have four middle schools, two high schools, and throughout the athletic season and throughout the school year, we have buses that take kids to their house. After practice, whether it's middle school, there's might be four or five buses depending on the number of students. In high school, there might even be two different times that buses will take kids home after practice. It's been common practice in the Waterloo School District for quite a few years. We've added some things to it. It does have a cost associated with it, but we really feel that if we want to get kids and encourage kids to be involved and all kids to have an opportunity to be involved in after-school athletics and clubs, that we need to make sure that transportation is not a barrier.
Well, and as you mentioned, athletics and clubs. So this is for all extracurricular activities, and there are many, many benefits to other kinds of extracurricular activities as well, even though we're mostly focusing on athletics today. Do you know why Waterloo decided that this was a priority for the district?
I think it's been a priority because we wanted to make sure we were equitable and students that didn't live happen to be living close to a neighborhood school still had the opportunity to participate in those after-school athletics. The buses are mainly for athletics, but if kids stay after for another club and there still happens to be athletics, they're more than welcome to ride that bus. So it's just been a longstanding goal of Waterloo Schools to make sure we were providing equitable access to our sport. So it wasn't a matter of if you had transportation, you could participate, and if you didn't, you probably wouldn't be able to do so.
Do you know how long Waterloo has been doing this?
Quite a while. I know I graduated in 1982 from Waterloo, and we had activity buses then, so it's been going on for quite a while.
All right, so several decades at least.
Yes.
What is your participation rate like?
You know, that's something that's really crucial to Waterloo Schools. I know it's one of the metrics that's established by the school board, that our school leadership are a goal they have to set. Last year, we had phenomenal activity participation at the middle school. 65% of the middle school students participated in at least one event. And in high school, it was 60%. The goal was set was 60% middle school, 55% high school. We exceeded that goal. And I attribute the work of our transportation department and the finance department to make that happen as a big driver of those numbers.
That is really incredible. 65% in middle school, 60% in high school. What do you observe? What do you think the benefits are of having this kind of access?
You know, I think Mr. Gould said some very key things, that there's a lot of great life lessons to be learned in athletics. I think sometimes we focus on kids that may or may not get a scholarship or have that goal, but just the act of participating, being involved with other students, learning teamwork, learning sacrifice, learning discipline, hopefully. And as Mr. Gould said, Dan said, if, you know, we get a positive coach working with those students, that's a great benefit. I think it keeps them more connected to school and helps create a more positive and healthy school environment.
Now, of course, budgets are always a concern for every school district. Has there ever been talk of discontinuing this?
Not that I'm aware of. We've actually, in the last several years, kind of expanded some of what we're doing, and we've used some of our allowable growth money to make some more opportunities available below the junior high and high school. We've got some fifth grade activities going on where we're trying to introduce students who may have not had the chance to be on a parent-supported team to some of our athletics in grades 5 and 6, and we provide transportation right to their home after those opportunities as well.
So that gives them an opportunity to maybe be a little more competitive when they get to junior high, maybe get on that basketball team?
Yes, we hope that they learn some, develop skills and develop a love for the game, and that then causes them or creates a love, and I want to go out for that in 7th and 8th grade and participate, maybe when they hadn't had the chance to be on a one of those out-of-school teams.
Well, Dan, we have another member of the Waterloo School District staff with us as well. I want to bring into this conversation. Caleb Grant is a teacher and coach at Central Middle School in Waterloo. Hi, Caleb.
How are you?
Good.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here today. And Dan mentioned the 65% participation rate among middle schoolers in Waterloo, which seems like a really incredible rate. What does the view look like from where you are, Caleb?
Actually, we enjoy it. I think just having the increased numbers of students, and kind of like Dan said, is just kind of taking one barrier away. So it increased our overall numbers as coaches. And if you increase that number, then we can see the overall talent within our district just kind of increases, because those kids are getting the opportunity to play those sports. And they continue playing them, then it'll make the high school sports even better and get kids more involved in those activities, which, like you said, 65% is just continuing to increase that. And even if it's just a little bit, one more kid every year, you know, I think with the district starting the 5th and 6th grade items, that will make it able to increase our numbers for 7th and 8th grade as well. So, and then that also increase our numbers for high school too.
Now, breaking down the transportation barrier is huge. Are there other things that you're doing in Waterloo that you think is a key to this success, this participation rate?
I think just the coaching, you know, I think one of the things that Waterloo does now, we have a coaching academy, and they kind of stress to the coaches the importance of you know, getting kids out and making it fun for kids, and so that they're enjoying the sport and they're also learning, but they're enjoying it. And so therefore, you know, with kids, they're going to, it spreads out. So like, for example, I'll give you, you know, last year, I think I had about 24 between my seventh and eighth grade for track. And this year so far, we have about 56 that are signed up. So just, you know, and that was my first year coaching. So it's, you know, you get the kids talking about it, talking about the coaches, how much fun they're having. And, you know, if that transportation is not that barrier to stop them, so then we get more kids that are coming out and more kids that are doing it, and that increase the overall sports here in Waterloo.
Now, as Dan Gould was talking about earlier, there can be a barrier as far as, okay, you know, you've got five starters on the basketball team, you've got a couple different basketball teams, but it's hard to allow every kid who wants to be a part of a sport to be a part of a sport as the performance level increases, especially through high school. So Caleb, I'll start with you, and then we'll go to Dan Huff. In the Waterloo District, what kinds of things can you do, have you done, to make sure that any kid who wants to participate can?
Oh, what we do is, it's really nice. We have, you know, for example, volleyball that I coach with seventh grade, we'd have like an ABC team. So we'd have every girl, they'd be on a team. Some schools have an ABC team. If a school doesn't have one, we'd split the BC team so that every kid participates. Every kid plays. Every kid's got that opportunity, not just in practice, but they get the opportunity to experience the game situation, and then they're getting better. So, and that's one of the things that, you know, basketball the same way, ABC, track, every kid participates in an event, in an individual event, a field event. You know, because it's one thing to have them in practice, but you also want to get them in the game situation and, you know, get them to develop those skills, get them to make sure they're still having fun, but just so they enjoy the sports. You don't want a kid to feel like, hey, all I'm doing is practice and I don't get to play. But here at the middle school level, we have multiple teams so that the kids do have that opportunity to play. And based on those teams at other schools, you play kids similar level. So therefore, those, you know, they're not having to play the really good team. So our really good will play against the other teams really good. And then it goes, like I said, C play against C, B plays against B, A plays against A. So those kids do get an opportunity to play in those games. So that's one of the things here in Waterloo, I think other district as well.
Yeah, and in most of the large districts in Iowa, there are, at least in the middle school and junior high, we do see that A, B, C breakdown. Dan Huff, as kids get into high school, It may be a little harder to include everyone. Of course, the kids are going to peel off based on their interest level as well. But what do you do in high school to try to really welcome kids?
You know, I think Caleb really did a great job this year of working, and his athletic director, Mike Landers, and all of our ADs work really hard at getting kids out. And we've kind of got a philosophy that we've started in our coaches' academy. Get them out, keep them out, and develop them. At the high school, there's often freshman teams, there's potentially sophomore teams, there's JV teams, and then there's varsity teams. So we do try to make sure that all students that want to come out have the best opportunity to get in some game time. And the thing that's really important that we, when we have these A, B, and C teams, whether it be at middle school or high school, is someone who in seventh grade's on the C team, by the time they're a senior in high school, they might be all state. So we want to make sure we don't lose some students like that. Some other things that we've found that we've started this year through our Waterloo Coaches Academy that we've got funded by a private grant for the next 3 years minimum, is we've created an athletic academic advisor position at each middle school and at each high school to help students, to monitor their grades, to help them develop good study habits, to maybe create study tables to where the students can go and get extra help. But it's the first time we've tried that with our coaches. Hey, keep an eye on your students, try to follow up. But, you know, they're busy with everything, and they're still doing that. But now we've got a person that's dedicated to doing that with all the students that they work with throughout the whole school year. And we just got that off the ground in October, and we really think that's going to pay big dividends to keep people out and keep them eligible, because we know once they're ineligible, they're not likely to stick with it. So it's a great positive thing, not just for athletics, but for the whole school environment. So we're really trying to do everything we can to get kids out, keep them out, and develop them.
Dan, do you hear from other districts, other athletic directors who find out what's going on in Waterloo and call and say, how are you managing this? Because, of course, starting a program is pretty hard.
We've just kind of got this off the ground. We haven't done a lot of publicity. This is probably the first time we've talked about it outside of our district, some of the things we're doing with our coaches' academy and our academic advisors' positions and other things we're trying to do. So it's still in the development stage, and we've got off to a great start, as Caleb had mentioned, and we really think we want to provide support for our coaches and for our student athletes and people involved in activities.
Well, Dan, I hope you'll come back and talk to me in a year or so, and we can talk more about how that's been going. I am curious, though, do you have other districts saying, how do you manage the activity buses?
You know, I think our transportation folks, you know, we contract our transportation out to a company, as do quite a few other districts. We also know there's a nationwide shortage of school bus, not just drivers, not just in Iowa, but across the nation. So we've had to scramble and do the best we can to get our buses to handle all these things and make sure we can still do those. I give credit to our bus garage, our transportation company, Durham. They work as best they can with their limitations to do everything we've asked them, and so they're working hard. Those are challenges across the state, is working with, you know, limited number of bus drivers that are signing up to work. Some schools say, you know, by law we have to get them to school and get them home, and you know, it's other than that we have a hard time finding the drivers. So I certainly sympathize with that. But I also credit our transportation director here in the district, Marty Metcalf, and also the transportation system. They themselves work hard to try to provide all those buses for us.
Well, Dan Huff, thank you so much for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you. This is a great program.
Dan Huff is the athletic director for Waterloo's School District. Caleb Grant, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate it.
Caleb Grant is a teacher and coach at Central Middle School in Waterloo. Dan Gould is still with me, director of the Institute for the Study of Youth Sports. He's also a professor of kinesiology at Michigan State University. And Dan, I was struck by something Dan Huff was saying when he was talking about how the focus isn't necessarily on kids getting scholarships or, you know, looking at becoming professional athletes later on. That's something that you've really focused on as well, the fact that most high school athletes will end their athletic career in high school. Why do you think it's important for parents and coaches and teachers and everybody to understand that?
Yeah, I think because of those benefits we talked at the start of the show. It's ironic that I'm doing a study now where I'm interviewing people that played sports 50 years ago. And I interviewed somebody that was in the insurance agency that played high school basketball and only played 5% of the time. And yet he felt the skills he learned about being in that role helped them be very successful in managing the insurance company and building teams and taking pride. So you know, athletic success is pretty short term. What you learn through sports can serve you for a lifetime. And I think as parents, sometimes we get so hung up in, you know, because it's so right in front of us, reading our child's name in the sports page, et cetera. But kids who look back, it's not just the starters that get the benefits. It's all the kids on the team. And, you know, that philosophy they have in Waterloo, get them out, keep them out, develop them. It's ironic at the beginning levels of sport up through the front end of high school, that's what you want to do to keep the most kids out. But Dan Huff also talked about they'll get kids who wouldn't have an opportunity when they were really, really young. They were on the C team, and they become All-State later. It's actually the way you actually develop athletic talent, by having a real broad base, get a lot of people involved, and then provide opportunities for the most talented ones, but don't forget the others. Because there's so many benefits for kids. I mean, if we just get kids to fall in love with activity, for the nation, that's going to help us so much. And if people who stay active are sick less often and help keep our insurance rates down. So there's a lot of benefits we don't want to forget about for all kids. And I should say, I wanted to say how impressed I was what they're doing in Waterloo. First, they have a metric. They can tell you what their participation rates are. A lot of schools can't. How many kids start? How many leave? They have coach training. Literature repeatedly shows the better relationships coach forms with kids, the more they keep out. They have A, B, C teams. They've eliminated the transportation barrier. They have a private partnership to fund the coaching academy. Now they're experimenting with like an academic advisor to help kids realize
it's school. We have to take a break, but they are doing a lot of things that are really innovative. Dan Gould is here with me, director of the Institute for the Study of Youth Sports. We'll continue our conversation about youth sports, access, and equality in a moment on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're exploring issues of access and equality in youth athletics. With me right now is Dan Gould. He is director of the Institute for the Study of Youth Sports and a professor of kinesiology at Michigan State University. We've been talking about some of the barriers that stand in the way of young people participating in athletics at their public schools, junior highs, high schools. And we've also taken a look at Waterloo, a district that is working hard to break down a lot of those barriers. A key ingredient in that is providing activity buses. We've heard from a couple of other people who want to be part of this conversation as well. We had a message that says a barrier that gets in the way of kids, especially those who are in a lower socioeconomic status participating, is the requirement that they have a sports physical. The schools often require those physicals be done in a very limited amount of time, which is not really necessary. Medicaid pays for a wellness exam, which is more robust and includes a sports physical, but they end up getting charged for it. Medicaid families forgo a sports physical, and for that financial reason, they cannot participate in sports. So there's another barrier, another key barrier for a lot of students who want to participate. We also had this from David in Waukee. He says, here in Waukee, we have teams, we have teams composed of elite athletes who belong to clubs and or have had private coaching. As a result, a number of athletes who cannot make Waukee teams transfer to smaller schools like Van Meter or Adel, where they're able to play. And of course, kids in lower socioeconomic circumstances do not have the ability to do that. That creates a whole nother transportation barrier and a whole nother list of issues. I want to bring somebody else into the conversation now. Isaiah Knox is executive director of Urban Dreams in Des Moines. This is an organization that provides a wide range of human service programs to break down barriers for underserved and underrepresented populations in Des Moines. And they also play a key role in a lot of the sports careers of young people in the Des Moines area. Hello, Isaiah.
Thanks for having me on.
Oh, thank you so much for being here. And tell us just a little bit about the sporting opportunities you offer kids in the Des Moines area.
Yeah, you know, at Urban Dreams, we give young people low-cost or free opportunities to play in game situations. We don't do a lot of training or coaching, but give them opportunities to come out and play in structured environments.
And what do you see with the population that you work with? Do you see kids who feel like they really can't participate in school athletics?
Yeah, all the time. There's so many different things. And I think a lot of the two Dans and the teacher from Waterloo have really talked about some of those things. But creating that relationship, coaches at the high school level often have difficult times because they have to often discipline students in school too, or behavior issues, and have and then grading them. And we talked about the pay for play or the AAU or the travel teams, where those coaches are kind of more mentors and have time to just participate on a certain specific sport for the student athlete. So they really bond a lot better.
And what do you think the personal cost is to those students who feel shut out?
Oh, there's so many, right? Like, I mean, they become hopeless in many occasions, and they think that they're not good enough for the school sports, or they're not good enough for these travel teams, and they become hopeless. And then we're talking about a whole nother thing with behavior issues and lack of opportunity out there for them, or some of the skills that they do build, like teamwork and cooperation and failure, those things that we talked about earlier. They don't learn those skills. So when they have those situations pop up in employment situations, they usually fail at those employment situations, or even post-secondary education or whatever kind of situation.
What do you think some of the most common, and it's okay to repeat some of the things that we've already talked about, what do you feel like some of the most common barriers the kids that you work with run into when they want to participate in school sports but really feel like they can't?
Yeah, so not only do Urban Dreams do we provide opportunities, like we have the Kids and Cops 3-on-3 basketball tournament in March that we host every year where students can come out and play. If they can't afford to pay the $100, we let them play for free, for sure. And then we have every Thursday night the Summer City Hoops at Evelyn K. Davis Park, so students can walk there and they can play. And it's a structured tournament style every single Thursday night until 11 p.m. under the lights. So students like that, that's from June to August in the summer. But that's one thing, the transportation. When I coached at North and chat with Chad Ryan on the basketball team, we drove kids home every day after practice. That was part of the thing, the transportation. I remember it's been well documented, Chad had to buy a van in order to get all the players home. But that created relationships with the students and actually then created a winning atmosphere in that school, which hadn't won in a long time. And now there's more students, I think, that go out for basketball, I swear, than they go out for football at that school.
It's so interesting. When you talk about transportation, as I mentioned, I live in a district that does not have transportation buses. And that's challenging for parents of privilege, as well as parents who are of a lower socioeconomic status. And I was thinking about the kind of social network that I have to tap into to get my kids places, but I have that social network. And that's a challenge for parents in addition to a challenge for kids. If your kid wants to do something, but you don't have the friend network that you can tap into for carpools, you can't make it happen.
No, you can't. It's just impossible. And like Dan said, oftentimes you're getting out of practice. If you're practicing sometimes on those C teams, they practice after varsity because there's limited gym space. And you're practicing in the winter and you're getting out at 8 o'clock at night and you have to walk home.
Now, you do participate in the AAU system. Tell mm-hmm. me what you see in that system, because, of course, a lot of kids are shut out of that system because they don't have the funds to be a part of a private team or a club team. But that is a place where you've seen a lot of benefits to the kids that you help participate in it.
For sure. Fewer kids are shut out than I think that we feel are shut out.
That's good to hear.
Most clubs that I've participated with, Kingdom Hoops, Iowa Elite, Beyond Ball, All Iowa Tack, I've participated in all those programs, either coaching or had my kids play. And they typically let kids that can't afford to play an opportunity to get on a team. Now, the better skilled those students are, the more opportunity they're probably going to have to get on one of those teams for free, which often leaves unskilled kids out. Which is probably the biggest barrier that we're talking about here. Because if you're a commodity, then you're going to be sought after. And that's for the coaches, and that's for the players and all that. But it's the greatest opportunity for these students, because imagine this, right? Every single weekend in the summer, you're basically going on vacation, playing basketball, staying in a hotel. You know, you're going to Atlanta, you're going to Dallas, you're going to Chicago, you're going to Minneapolis, and you're experiencing all these things with this new group of friends. And then you're expanding your network, because all these kids, when they're playing against each other after the game, they're following each other on social media. So these experiences that these students have are way beyond any experience that the typical standard high school basketball student has, right? By going to Marshalltown on a Friday night, when you're going to Chicago for a weekend and playing against literally some guys that are going to be playing in the NBA.
Although, again, that's available to a small number of kids.
It's getting bigger.
All right. Well, I want to, Isaiah, you stay with us. I want to bring somebody else into the conversation, because as Dan Gould mentioned earlier, we are finding that communities are looking toward nonprofits or other organizations like your organization and many other kinds of organizations that are trying to even the playing field, that provide scholarships or provide opportunities to kids who can't participate in other ways. And joining us next is Emily Limus, a board member of Drew's Crew for Kids, and also an elementary school counselor in Waukee. But the mission of Drew's Crew is to facilitate access to enrichment activities for local youth in need. Hello, Emily.
Hi there, Charity. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And tell us, I summed up your mission statement there, but
yeah,
tell us a little bit about what Drew's Crew does.
Yeah, so we work to provide financial assistance for kids so they can participate in enrichment activities or extracurriculars. And we really use the language of enrichment activities because, as lots of your wonderful guests today have talked about sports, you know, we also recognize that not every kid is passionate about sports. So we really work to connect kids to things that they are personally passionate about. So for lots of kids, yeah, it is going to be joining a basketball league, or yeah, it is going to be joining gymnastics. But for lots of kids, it might not be. It might be joining Scouts, or it might be joining the band, or it might be doing robotics or coding camps or clinics outside of school. So that's really our focus, is to connect kids to the activities outside of school that they have a personal passion about.
And what area do you serve?
We serve, obviously, we offer financial assistance, so we do serve low-income families, and we have financial guidelines. So when families apply, they submit their financial information, and so then if their application is approved, for example, then what we do is then we work with the family to connect them with an organization within our community that would be a good fit. And so that might be a sports affiliated team, or it might be just another organization, but we also make sure that they have every single thing that they would need to fully participate. So that might be a new set of tennis shoes, or it might be a set of baseball cleats, or it might be a leotard. And so we work to make sure that they have everything that they need to have the full experience that their peers would have.
Now, this is something that I'm sure so many families do benefit from and can benefit from, but a lot of families whose kids feel shut out of these kinds of sports don't necessarily know how to take advantage of opportunities like this one. How do you connect with families? How do you get the word out?
Yeah, well, we're a nonprofit, so we're all volunteer-based. So a lot of times it's our board members just kind of doing publicity. But honestly, a lot of times it's people like me, elementary school counselors, middle school counselors, secondary, who just the nature of our jobs, we get to know families and students so well. So a lot of times it's us reaching out directly to families and talking to kids. Oh, I know you're really passionate about this. Have you ever considered, you know, whatever activity it might be? And so a lot of times it's just the relationship building that we naturally do with students and with families.
Transportation can still be a barrier, even if the cost is not.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that?
Yeah. And you know what? That's something that we are continuing to investigate and trying to build on. It can look lots of different ways because, no, we do not have a specific system that provides transportation. Well, sometimes it is based on the relationship we have. So, for example, I have taken kids to activities. If I have a relationship with their family and the family's comfortable and it's outside of school hours, obviously, then absolutely I'll provide transportation and as well my counselor cohort. But you said something earlier, Charity, about fostering those social networks. So that's something that we work to connect parents with each other. And that way, if they need a ride, perhaps somebody in the neighborhood is also going to that same activity at the same time, and being able to help families grow their social networks too. So that idea of asking for help and parents depending on each other, it just becomes more a norm within our community.
I can think of a number of other nonprofit organizations in the state who are doing similar work. So I don't want to leave anybody out, but I'm not going to name a lot of names. But I have to imagine that just getting the word out is one of your biggest challenges.
Oh, absolutely it is. It absolutely is. And, you know, obviously there's still a stigma associated with needing financial assistance. And so it's not just the publicity and getting the word out, but it's continuing to break that negative stigma that it's okay to ask for help. And so that's the other mission that we work hard to do, is to actively try to break that down within our own community.
Absolutely. And for the other children involved in the activity to not know that a child is getting help.
Absolutely.
Well, Emily, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us today. Emily Limas is a board member of Drew's Crew for Kids and an elementary school counselor in Waukee. Isaiah, we're nearly out of time here, but there are a number of these nonprofit organizations that provide activities like this. Of course, you also have to get the word out about what you do at Urban Dreams. Do you see that as a major barrier, just people not knowing that there are opportunities available?
Not knowing and a little bit too proud to ask sometimes for help is another thing that I'm sure that Emily and her team falls into, especially like specialized gear. It's hard. That's another barrier that I don't think we even talked about. But
right.
Cleats, how many kids have I watched come out and literally play in sandals, basketball, or play in basketball shoes, baseball, and they're slipping all over the field, or football, and they're slipping all over the field. So, yeah, there's a lot of pride in kids or families or adults or anybody asking for help. So you have to make it available in a real authentic way where they don't feel uncomfortable.
Well, and there are even rec leagues that if you don't have the right equipment, they won't let you on the field.
Right.
Well, Isaiah, thank you so much for being here today. Isaiah
thank
Knox
you.
Is Executive Director of Urban Dreams. And Dan Gould, we have just a few minutes left, and we've talked about so many barriers and challenges to the way that our culture is changing. You talked about trying to get the word out on the negative effects of early specialization, which doesn't necessarily seem to be catching on like wildfire. What do you feel that people who really care about these issues can and should be focusing on?
First, I think you had a great show today with great guests and brought a lot of important things. The first thing I take home is sort of a metric. You know, most coaches can tell you their one loss record. If we can get them to talk about their participation rates and their dropout rates, so we bring attention to it. The other thing is, if you're a parent and, you know, there's a lot of pressure today for picking one sport early, you kind of have a good insurance policy if your child plays and is exposed to a number of different sports. Let's use basketball. She doesn't make the high school team, but she played soccer and cross country and might be able to find a different sport, even though basketball didn't work out. So a multi-sport has a lot of advantages physically and some other things than, you know, but there's just such pressure, and it's really hard for parents. I don't have the magic formula on that one.
Well, at least we're thinking about some of those solutions. Dan Gould, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you.
Dan Gould, Director of the Institute for the Study of Youth Sports and Professor of Kinesiology at Michigan State University. This hour, we've been talking about issues of access and equality in youth athletics. We've also talked to a number of people in Iowa who are working hard to level the playing field. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio. Our producers are Rick Brewer, Dennis Reese, Matt Alvarez, and Caitlin Harrop. You never need to miss an episode of Talk of Iowa. You can subscribe to our podcast, where wherever you get your podcasts, just search for Talk of Iowa and subscribe. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.